Mr. Dickey, are you prepared?
I am, Mr. Chief Judge, and may it please the court. My name is Gary Dickey. I represent Heather Trogdon, who asked this court to reverse the district court's denial of her motion to suppress a firearm that was found in her backpack. The relevant analysis, Your Honors, begins with the Riley versus California decision, in which the United States Supreme Court clarified that the search incident to arrest exception really consists of three related rules. The first is the Chamel rule, in which searches within an arrestee's immediate control are justified based on officer safety and the need to prevent the destruction of evidence. The second rule is the Robinson line of cases, which is a per se rule that allows the search of an arrestee's person and the personal property that's immediately associated on that arrestee's person. And then the final rule comes from Arizona v. Gant, in which the police may search a vehicle when the arrestee is unsecured and within reaching distance of the passenger compartment at the time of the search. And of course, the Riley decision itself created a sort of fourth rule that subsequent searches of cell phones are not reasonable under the search incident to arrest rule. None of these justifications support law enforcement search of Ms. Trogdon's backpack in this case. It was not a vehicle-related search, so the Gant rule does not apply. It was not a search of Ms. Trogdon's person, so the Robinson line of cases do not apply, which only leaves the Chamel rule. And that, the United States Supreme Court, as well as this court, has made clear is limited to the grab areas or areas within the wingspan of an arrestee.
Counsel, could some form of inevitable discovery rationale support not suppressing the evidence here?
Mr. Chief Judge, not on this record. Possibly if the government had met its burden. So recall, this is a warrantless search, so it's presumptively unreasonable. And the burden is on the government to show inevitable discovery. At the district court, the government posited two theories. One theory, which was that the backpack would have been seized and transported to the jail and then searched at the jail pursuant to an inventory search.
What about a search on the premises based on the investigation of a shoplifting, that they recovered items removed from the store without payment that were open and obvious based because of their position on the defendant? Why wouldn't it have been reasonable that there might be other stolen items or unpaid for items contained in the bag?
That's an entirely reasonable conclusion. And to be clear, we do not argue that the government lacked probable cause to believe that there was stolen items in the backpack. The government certainly had probable cause to seize the backpack, but at that point they had no basis to search the backpack without getting a warrant. So had the law enforcement seized the backpack and obtained a warrant, they could have searched that backpack. And let me be clear why the warrant requirement is particularly important in this case. So it does two things. First, the warrant requirement obviously interposes a neutral and detached magistrate between law enforcement and Ms. Trogdon, which is important in and of itself. But second, the warrant requirement would have imposed a particularity limitation to the search, which was not present in this case. So had law enforcement obtained a warrant, it would have limited the search to looking for stolen merchandise. And as the video shows, this was a general search. The law enforcement officer pulled out medication, looked at the medication, which was in no way related to the search for stolen merchandise. So the warrant requirement isn't just the technicality in this case, Your Honor. It would have served an important purpose had the government sought one. Perhaps with a warrant requirement, if law enforcement opens the main compartment to the bag and doesn't immediately see any stolen merchandise, they don't continue generally rummaging through the backpack and find the gun. So, Your Honor, this is not a case of inevitable discovery. This is not a case in which they had the right to search Ms. Trogdon's backpack absent a warrant. And so the central flaw of the district court's analysis is on full display on page 8, in which the district court says, I'm going to quote from the decision, the justification for a search incident to a lawful arrest is stronger when there is a likelihood of finding evidence related to the arrest in the subject item of the search. And for that premise...
Well, you've acknowledged that there was probable cause to search for evidence related to the shoplifting investigation.
Right.
And so that they would have had probable cause to search for shoplifting evidence. And so they're on an independent investigation for a separate crime, not generally searching for firearms and contraband, but looking specifically for items that could have been secreted in the backpack pursuant to shoplifting. And they're looking and there is the firearm. It's not, they weren't looking for a gun. They acknowledged that they wanted to search the backpack. But at the time, they were not investigating for weapons, but investigating for shoplifting.
And so, Your Honor, that's true in the context of vehicle searches. That's true in the context of Arizona v. Gant. So, and that's the error of the district court. That passage the district court cites is from Arizona v. Gant, which the court expressly states on page 343 of the Gant decision, that portion is limited to vehicle searches because of the unique exigencies of mobility of vehicles and the diminished expectation of privacy on
but inevitable discovery is not limited to vehicles, though, is it?
It's not. And so if the court wants to adopt a rule that says a warrant's not required if law enforcement could obtain a warrant and then they can do any general search they want, then you know, there's no case that allows the court to do that.
But that's not the argument being advanced either. The argument being advanced is that she was going to be taken into custody because she was wearing clothes that had been shoplifted and she put on inside the store and walked out. When she was going into custody, the stuff on her person and the stuff she was carrying are going to go to the jail with her. And inevitably, we are going to have to do an inventory search because we inventory every single bag by policy because we don't want to be accused of having stolen the people's goods while they're in jail. And that gun was in plain view. So the moment that anybody opened that bag to inventory it, they would have seen the gun. That's their argument on inevitability. And so why isn't that inevitable?
That's wrong for two reasons. First, remember, the burden is on the government to show inevitable discovery. And in order to just...
That's kind of what they think they've done. They've said that here's the chain of circumstances that are going to play out. All right. Well,
Your Honor, there is no inventory policy in this record. I mean, does the Polk County...
Counsel, isn't it also true that the government didn't seize the bag? They gave the bag to the boyfriend, I think, is how the facts went. Is that accurate?
Correct. So, Mr. Chief Judge, there's two reasons. First, they haven't produced an inventory policy from the jail. I mean, that's entirely speculative on this record. So they can claim there's an inventory search that would have happened, but they haven't met their burden to show it. And then factually, we know that the backpack was turned over. It wasn't inevitably inventory searched. So factually and legally, that justification cannot be made. They haven't met their burden.
Mr. Dickey, you're within your rebuttal time. You've got about a minute left. You can continue or you can reserve it.
I will reserve my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dickey. Ms. Tubbs?
May it please the court. I'm Mackenzie Tubbs, and I represent the United States of America. This court should affirm the district court's denial of Ms. Trogdon's motion to suppress the gun found in her backpack as a valid search incident to arrest. First and foremost, this search was reasonable. And that's what's paramount under the Fourth Amendment. You watch the officer in the video approach a suspect, someone who has shoplifted from the store she's outside of. It was reasonable for that officer to approach her and to collect the bag that he saw in her hand, the bag that was within her immediate control. It was reasonable for the officer to take that bag into the loss prevention office and search it.
Well, counsel, isn't the rationale, though, I think where the appellant is going is that the general rationale for a search incident to arrest is for the officer's safety, not necessarily for officer's investigation of a specific offense, but its basic rationale is to enable officers to secure their investigatory environment to make sure that the person they're talking to can't just reach around into a bag and pull out a deadly weapon.
Yes, Your Honor, that is one of the purposes of the search incident to arrest exception. And I think that was effectuated here by the officer going into the controlled environment of the loss prevention office to effectuate that search. Now, the
But the search wouldn't be necessary if the officers have taken the bag from the possession of the person that they're detaining.
The officer made the decision to not conduct the search in the parking lot. The officer could have, at that point, searched the bag in the parking lot incident to Ms. Trogdon's arrest. And what is reasonable about the officer's decision is that he instead took that into the bag into the controlled environment of the loss prevention office.
But what's the rationale for the search? Is it to find a weapon or is it to find evidence of shoplifting?
I think both.
And I believe the record tells us the officer was intending to search the bag in their shoplifting investigation from the time they picked it up.
And yes, we do have that testimony in the record, Your Honor. Of course, we know that the officer's subjective intents do not matter when we consider the search incident to arrest exception, but we know those in this case. However, the officer was, of course, looking for evidence, and the district court recognized that this court's decision in Perdomo discusses that is one of the rationales, even in a non-vehicle context, that the Fourth Amendment allows for the warrantless search incident to arrest. It is, in fact, to protect evidence, and that's what the officer was doing here, was to protect
that. What's your best case for the authority that searches incident to arrest or to preserve evidence, or to locate it and preserve evidence?
Certainly that is a discussion in Gantt. That is the second prong of Gantt, and that expressly recognizes that is unique to vehicles. However, I think it's applicable here, and that is what demonstrates that.
So Gantt is your best case?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that Gantt is the clearest case that is one of the justifications for search incident to arrest. Also, this court's decision in Morales, an Eighth Circuit case from 1991, where in that case we had officers waiting at a bus station for an individual who they had information would be arriving, and they searched that defendant when the bag was 3 feet away from him as well. Also, Perdomo recognizes this underlying justification for the search incident to arrest exception. And the defendant here has not provided a reason why the district court's analysis of the Perdomo decision is at all distinguishable. And the only distinguishable fact is one in favor of the government, and that's that Ms. Trogdon was not restrained, whereas the defendant in Perdomo was. The district court's analysis and application of the Perdomo decision was not erroneous and should be affirmed.
What's the government's position as to the time of seizure? At what point was the appellant seized and subject to arrest and entitled to Miranda warnings?
Your Honor, I believe the parties are in agreement that that occurred in the parking lot. At the time that Ms. Trogdon was approached in the parking lot was the moment when she was arrested. She was certainly not free to leave from the time she was approached in the parking lot. And that is the moment when she was seized. And I think that shines the light on why this search was reasonable. The other, if not at that moment that the officer had arrested her, the other option for the officer was to leave the bag in the parking lot. And that is not reasonable. The officer here collected that bag for the purpose of searching it incident to her arrest. I do want to...
If you're going to conduct a search incident to the arrest, and you've now got the bag, how far away can you go from the defendant with the bag to search it, right? I mean, you go four blocks away and say, now it's incident to the arrest. Now, if the purpose of the incident to the arrest is to prevent the destruction of potential evidence and to for officer safety, well, that evidence is never going to be destroyed because it's in the hands of the officer, and it's not going to be subject to any risk to the officer's safety because the officer's got the bag and he's separated her from the bag. And and I get that it's kind of an absurd result to say walk four blocks away, but the reality of it is you move into a closed area where law enforcement and store personnel dramatically outnumber this woman. The bag is feet away from her, and officer safety seems to be greatly diminished there. And it seems to me that at that point, the destruction of contraband is also greatly diminished. And so the real question is, how does it fit into a search into an incident to an arrest at that point? I mean, this woman had to jump over the table to get to the gun.
And I would disagree that the woman would have had to jump over the table. It was a very small office, and you can see that in the video. She was unrestrained, and she could have easily grabbed that bag and ran, as she had already done, and the officers knew that. They called when she was in the office, and then they come, and she's in the parking lot. So she had already ran once. Now, I believe that the proposition from Edwards, the Supreme Court case from 1974, that states that searches and seizures that could be made on the spot at the time of arrest may legally be conducted later when the accused arrives at the place of detention. And so that holding has been interpreted in many cases.
Were those cases where there was an arrest and no reading of Miranda rights or anything other than the detention to put the accused on notice that they were under arrest and with rights under the Fourth Amendment?
Some of the cases were, Your Honor, and some of them were not. And some of them, the record is silent as to whether we have this formalization of the arrest. But that's not the analysis that the court needs to be concerned with. Here in the parking lot was the point when Ms. Trogdon was not free to leave. Now, I cited a case in my brief from the Third Circuit, the Myers case, and that is where the, as Judge Erickson suggested, where that temporal element was not met. In that case, they responded to a call for a disturbance, they arrested the defendant, and then they went and conducted interviews. But that's not what happened here. It was mere minutes from the time that the officers seized this bag to the time they searched it. It was at most 3 minutes and 38 seconds that it took them to walk the bag into the store and search it. And in that time, they were figuring out identification, and that search occurred on the premise of the store that Ms. Trogdon stole from. And all of those markers show that this search was reasonable. I'd like to briefly, I see my time has expired, but I'd like to briefly state that the government does believe it's met its burden here for the inventory search. As is always with inevitable discovery arguments where something else in fact happened, the fallacy here is that had the search not at all occurred, they would have, of course, searched it at the jail. And the officer testified that that was the policy and that's what would have happened. And the government believes it's met its burden on that alternative theory as well. We request.
Thank you, Ms. Tubbs.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Dickey, your rebuttal.
Yes, Mr. Chief Judge, and may it please the court. Judge Erickson, your question about a search four blocks away illustrates the real problem with law enforcement search here. Under United States versus Hill and United States versus Jackson, which we cite in our initial brief, and Mr. Chief Judge, those are the two cases that best support our argument. They're from this circuit. Both cases hold that under a Chamel search, it must be limited to the grab area, as Hill refers to it, and beyond 5 feet was too much in that case, or the wingspan, as Jackson calls it. In this case, the backpack was beyond Ms. Trogdon's grab area or wingspan at the time of the arrest. And so that distinguishes this case from Morales, which was 3 feet away, and for Perdomo, in which the arrestee had already fled and had to be apprehended. And so therefore, his potential wingspan or grab area was greatly exceeded what Ms. Trogdon's would have been under these facts. So we ask the court to reverse the district court's decision.
Go ahead, Judge Woolman.
This has nothing to do with the legal implications of this case, but I was struck by reading the transcript of the sentencing. Judge Rule said to this person, "You've been clinging to the edge of a cliff by your fingernails for most of your life, I would say, and so this is going to be a hard transition for you." I was reminded by, you know, we're all familiar with Henry David Thoreau's famous quote, "The mass of men live lives of quiet desperation," and I wonder if that doesn't describe this person. Again, it has nothing to do, but I was struck by the poignancy of Judge Rose's comment. It has nothing to do with the issues, but I've been hearing these cases. This is my 52nd year on the bench, and you read these things, and I guess we're thankful for the childhoods that we've had.
Your
that's
Honor,
my that's my sermon for the morning, I guess.
But for the grace, Your Honor, and it's been my privilege to represent Ms. Trogdon.
Thank you, Mr. Dickey. Thank you also, Ms. Tubbs and Mr. Dickey. We note that you have represented your client under the Criminal Justice Act, and the court thanks you for your willingness to serve in that capacity. Thank you.